So tonight I'm going to talk about discipline and self-discipline, this odd word. The word discipline itself comes from an ancient root for teaching. Discipline is something taught. A disciple is someone who receives those teachings. And even today we talk about academic disciplines. And of course there's this whole other side of the word to discipline, you know, which has the connotation of punishment or even inflicting pain. It's this very traditional yet curious idea that, you know, somehow inflicting pain is a good way to educate people. And then it even gets, the inflicting pain part even gets used in, you know, BDSM contexts, etc. So it's actually a word that's used in a variety of contexts in a variety of ways. Here, of course, we'll be focusing on spiritual discipline. And even that's interesting because at one level, spiritual discipline might be following the teachings that are given. You know, for example, following the Christian teachings, following the Buddhist teachings, that sort of thing. And I would say another way to think about it is following not a particular written teaching, but following what sometimes I refer to as the teaching, which is in many ways is the same as the Tao, just the force that informs all of our lives, that shapes our destinies, that throws us all kinds of surprises, the completely irrational nature of the way life just unfolds. This is the teaching. And ultimately, spiritual discipline, I believe, is about, as it were, apprenticing oneself to that discipline, apprenticing oneself to that teaching. In order to talk about discipline, I'm going to talk a little about the brain. So one very simple way to think about the brain, and this is probably very familiar to many people, the three-layer brain. There's a part back here, the reptilian brain, that largely runs all the stuff on automatic pilot in our body. When we're living in our reptilian brain, for the most part, that usually doesn't feel fun. It's very petty, it's vicious, it's nasty, you know. We may have moments like that, but then afterwards we really don't feel good about ourselves for having a moment like that, you know, that kind of thing. That's the reptilian brain. There are people who spend all of their lives in the reptilian brain, but they usually don't come to meditation groups. Then there's the mammalian brain, which is in the center of the head, the limbic system. And this we share in common with all mammals. This has the full range of emotions, basic emotions. Now, there's many wonderful things about the limbic system, many wonderful things about the mammalian brain, because that's where we feel connection with others, and it feels good to socialize. You know, it feels good to give affection and get affection, to give love, to get love. Like, all that kind of stuff is about the mammalian brain. It's a very warm, fuzzy part of our brain. But there are dangers associated with the mammalian brain, and this is underappreciated. And one way to talk about this is a study from psychology. They did this on rats. Now, I realize you may not feel cuddly about rats, but rats have the same basic emotions, the same range of emotions that we have. And so what they did is they put a rat in a cage with two levers. One lever just dispenses food anytime the rat wants it. The other lever is connected to wires that stimulates the pleasure centers of the rat's brain. And they've done this experiment multiple times. Every single time, the same thing happens. The rat starves to death. That's profound. It has a lever right there where it could get food anytime it wants. But the experience of pleasure is so powerful that the rat will neglect even its basic physical needs for the pursuit of pleasure. And that is the power of pleasure, that when we're hooked by pleasure, the pleasure that stimulates the mammalian brain, because the pleasure center of the brain is in the limbic system, we can get hooked by pleasure in a way that it pulls us away from all our self-interest, even our most basic physical self-interest. And the same is true of fear also on the opposite side. Fear can also pull us away from even our most basic self-interest. Now, of course, sometimes it works out, and I mean, obviously, sometimes the things that are good for us are also pleasurable, sometimes the things that are bad for us are also make us afraid, and, you know, sometimes the pleasure and the fear kind of work to our advantage, but we can't rely on that. Now, the higher level of the brain, which actually is most of the volume of the brain, this is the cortex. This is the part that is uniquely human. And this gives us all kinds of perspective, also all kinds of problems. This is the, among other things, the verbal part of the brain, the part of the brain that has two hemispheres. And this is the part of our human brain that allows us to override our animal instincts. I know that would be fun, but I need to do this now. I know I'm a little bit afraid of doing this, but I know it would be good for me. That kind of thing. The ability to move past the pure allure of pleasure or move past the pure wall of pain because we know something is right that is different from the way that our mammalian brain is pointing us. And that's the basic idea of discipline right there. That ability to resist the pull of pleasure or resist the pull of pain in order to live authentically the way that we want to live. And so I will say, if you think about discipline, if you think about where we are in life, where everyone in this room is, whatever educational attainment you have in your life, whatever work stuff you do in your life, you know, whatever career you've built or job you've done, all that does take discipline. I do want to acknowledge all of us have a tremendous amount of discipline just to get to where we are in our life. You know, just to have the education we have, just to have the career we have, just to be able to get your act together enough to be here on a Monday night to attend a meditation, you know, all that takes tremendous discipline. And so it's very important to appreciate the discipline that you have in your life. And we all could benefit from more discipline. In many ways, in the Buddhist perspective, discipline is actually one of the six paramitas, the six perfections of the Buddha. And these six are, you might say, touchstones on the bodhisattva path. These six are generosity, discipline, patience, enthusiasm, concentration, and insight. And so discipline is very important. It shows up in throughout the Buddhist writings. It does seem that it was something tremendously important in the message of the historical Buddha himself. There's a wonderful passage from the Dhammapada. The Dhammapada is a very short scripture from the Pali Canon, from the original Buddhist writings, and it really, many scholars think that the Dhammapada actually represents sayings of the historical Buddha himself. If you're familiar with the Buddhist scriptures, you know that there's like a bazillion sutras, and they all begin with "the Buddha said," and, you know, in order for the Buddha to have said all this, he would have had to live 3,000 years or something. But the Dhammapada itself does seem like it was the actual historical Buddha. And so there's this wonderful line from the Dhammapada: "As irrigators lead water where they want, as archers make their arrows straight, as carpenters carve wood, the wise shape their mind." And so this idea that we're, as it were, making a work of art out of our mind, and by doing so, making a work of art out of our lives. This ability to choose where we direct our attention, the ability to choose the kinds of response, the kinds of conscious response that we have to the world. And I want to make a distinction here, and this is very important. Discipline is not the same as control. A self-disciplined person is not an anal retentive person. It's very, very important, this distinction. Control is about the ego. The ego wants control. The ego wants all the good stuff and none of the bad stuff, and it wants, most of all, it wants to preserve itself. Have a good night. And I mean, that's the level at which control happens. Discipline is not about the ego. It's something, it's very, very subtle. Discipline, it's about an attention not to what we like or what we don't like, but an attention to what is, an acknowledgement of what is, and a deep inquiry into what is. I mean, even basic mindfulness practice, the point of mindfulness is not to go around saying, I like this, I don't like this. The point of mindfulness practice is to pay attention to simply what is. There's a wonderful quote from the third Zen patriarch. To divide what we like from what we don't like is a disease of the mind. When the deep meaning of things is not understood, the mind's essential peace is disturbed to no avail. And so discipline is very powerful. So how do we get it? How do we get more of it? And that is one of the hardest questions. It really is. It has a lot to do with attention, has a lot to do with the quality of our attention, is a lot to do with habits. Habits are one, by building habits, that's one of the ways that we build discipline, and by breaking bad habits. Part of it is kind of a ruthless honesty with ourselves, you know, because we all know where we want to go in life. We all know the kinds of goals we want to achieve. You know, where am I actually spending my money? Where am I actually spending my time? Like if I just, you know, if someone just followed me around with a camera and showed me, like, where's my time going? Where's my energy going? You know, would it even vaguely resemble the kind of life that I want to live, you know? And so it's just about being honest and looking at that. And the first step is just to acknowledge, how is it? How do we spend our money? How do we spend our energy? How do we spend our time, you know? And so at this point, I think I'll pass out the quote sheet. I often prepare a quote sheet. I used to be a high school teacher, so I have these handouts. And I think we may have enough for everyone in the room here. So there are a few quotes from the Dhammapada itself. I won't read the others there. But then a variety of quotes about discipline in a variety of contexts. So the ancient Greek historian Thucydides said, self-control is the chief element in self-respect, and self-respect is the chief element in courage. One that I love from Aristotle, I often quote this to my students, we are what we repeatedly do. Excellence, then, is not an act, but a habit. And I would even say that excellence is in many ways a series of habits or a collection of habits. The philosopher John Locke tells us the discipline of desire is the background of character, so much as we were talking about. Edmund Burke tells us it is ordained in the internal constitution of things that men of intemperate minds cannot be free, their passions forge their fetters. And I'm sure he thought that a lot of the revolution in France had to do with that. The Prime Minister Benjamin Disraeli said, the secret of success is constancy of purpose. And that's a very interesting thing. If you just thought about, You know, companies have, say, mission statements and statements of purpose. Does your life have a mission statement? If it did, what would it look like? Does your life have a statement of purpose? You know, if it did, what would it look like? And does the way that you actually live your life look anything like what you'd like your mission statement to be, you know? So, and again, just being honest about these things. From the great Bernard Montgomery, discipline strengthens the mind so that it becomes impervious to the corroding influence of fear. And so mastery of desire and mastery of fear are in many ways the two sides of discipline. The founder of Pakistan, Muhammad al-Jinnah, tells us, with faith, discipline, and selfless devotion to duty, there is nothing worthwhile that you cannot achieve. And it really is true, what we can achieve in this life, it's what we're actually able to do is so much beyond what we think we can do. Like, we think we can do so much, what we actually can do is so much more, but it takes discipline. From good old Harry S. Truman, in reading the lives of great men, I found that the first victory they won was over themselves. Self-discipline with all of them, came first. And this great one, I don't know much about William Feather, but I love this quote, if we do not discipline ourselves, the world will do it for us. Wow. That's deep. And that is very much the nature of the teaching. Like, I can go and voluntarily seek the teaching, or I can, you know, let the teaching clobber me, basically, you know. The mystic Aleister Crowley, to read the newspaper is to refrain from reading something worthwhile. The first discipline of education must be, therefore, to refuse resolutely to feed the mind with canned chatter. And that, what he was saying in the first part of the 20th century is so much more the case in the electronic age. From Helen Keller, one painful duty fulfilled makes the next plainer and easier. A fascinating one from Napoleon Hill, if you do not conquer the self, you will be conquered by the self. From the wise rabbi Abraham Jewish Heschel, self-respect is the fruit of discipline. The sense of dignity grows with the ability to say no to oneself. From the great football coach Vince Lombardi, it's easy to have faith in yourself and have discipline when you're a winner, when you're number one. What you got to have is faith and discipline when you're not a winner. And that's so true. It's easy to have discipline when things are going our way and we're happy. When you're feeling defeated, when you're really feeling totally run over by life, that's when you really know if you have the discipline to keep on living the way you want to live. From Nelson Mandela, running taught me valuable lessons. In cross-country competitions, training counted more than intrinsic ability, and I could compensate for a lack of natural aptitude with diligence and discipline. I applied this in everything I did. From Zig Ziglar, it's absolutely true that unless you can instill discipline upon yourself, you will never be able to lead others. From the figure skater, Barbara Ann Scott, those edges and turns teach control and discipline, just like finger exercises on the piano. She's talking literally about edges and turns during figure skating, but it's certainly true that the curveballs that life throws us, that's where we really learn discipline. I also like that she makes the reference to the piano. One of my favorite images of discipline, the pianist Rachmaninoff, he was a composer and a virtuoso pianist. He was widely revered as one of the greatest pianists during his age. Every single day, he would begin the day by practicing a couple hours of just scales, simple scales, scales in every key, scales up, scale down, doubles against triples, like the most basic finger exercise. He did that every single day. Like, and it's such a statement to me, like someone of that lofty ability never neglecting what was so profoundly simple. a short one from Dr. King, "The time is always right to do what is right." From the mayor of Carmel, Clint Eastwood, "It takes tremendous disciplines to control the influence you have over other people's lives." And it is true, and this is something I talked about last time in the Dharma Talk, we're always influencing each other. Like, however I walk through the world, I'm influencing the people around me in one way or another. To take responsibility for that, that's powerful. From the Dalai Lama, "Whether you call it Buddhism or another religion, self-discipline, that's important. Self-discipline with awareness of the consequences." The psychologist Daniel Goldstein tells us, "I think self-discipline is something, it's like a muscle. The more you exercise it, the stronger it gets." And Anthony Joshua says, "As long as you have discipline, you can be a success. Discipline is what makes you do everything you need to do."